Right, we'll start again. We're starting again from the beginning. This morning, no, I'm so sorry that the microphone was turned off, but yes, oh, I see, I can hear a bit of a boom now. Well, that went well, didn't it? If we look at John chapter 17, and for Maria's sake, verse 14, okay, or we'll go from 13, it says this. I am coming to you now, this is Jesus saying he is coming to his Father. This is in the Garden of Gethsemane, just hours before he leaves this world. But I shall say these things while I am still in the world, so that they may have the full measure of my joy within them. Now that's his disciples he's talking about. But as he leaves his disciples, he knows he's going to leave a hole in their lives. He knows that they're going to be weak and woolly when he is gone. But he's praying for them. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them. For they're not of this world any longer, because they're now trusting in Jesus. They are not of this world any more than I am of this world. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world and all its difficulties, but that you protect them from the evil one. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by the truth. Your word is truth. So Jesus is praying for his disciples here to actually say, that gap that's going to be left in their life, Father, fill it. And fill it with our whole being through the Holy Spirit. And then he prays for you in verse 20. My prayer is not for them alone, not just for his disciples. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message. That's you. So he wants your life to be filled. He wants your life to be filled with a joy and a peace and a contentment and a trust. Well, as I was trying to illustrate what trust and faith meant to me, what I was saying is, if you started off the week with this amount of trust in God, and you said, yes, I know that God is real, he has shown himself to me to this extent. And then you go on through that day, and you find that your God has met all of your needs and much more through that day. And that there were times when you had to take a step of faith in whatever action activity that might have been. And then the day comes to an end. If you were to pile all that lot together, then the next day your trust should be this big. Because now you have seen him work in your life. You have seen his protection. You have seen his provision. So you go into the next day. And now you've got, your trust is this big, but now you've got needs. Needs that must be met during that day. And you've got steps of faith you're going to take that day. And when you see that your God has been so good to you and met those needs and met your faith, the next day your trust in God should be this big. Now, if our trust is getting bigger and bigger because we're seeing God move in our lives, then why are we so easily shaken when things go wrong? We've got a God here, Jesus Christ, our Savior, is saying that he knows we're going to get into difficulties. We're going to have real issues to face. But he's also saying, but I'm with you in those. I'm not going to leave you to despair, to be downhearted. Because you can trust me this big on Monday, and this big on Tuesday, and this big on Wednesday, day after day after day. You can trust me. And that's what the life that we should be living is, in that light. That each day he has said he's going to meet us in all of our every need. As I said this morning, our security in him is not from trouble. He doesn't take us out of trouble. But our security in him is in that trouble. When we encounter those difficulties, that's when we see he is a great God. And I think I heard on the television this afternoon something about, without fear, we cannot display courage. And that's right. Because if there are things that we do not at all concern ourselves with, it's not brave and courageous to go into that. It's not trusting to go into that. It's when we recognize, yes, there are difficulties, but I can overcome those difficulties. Trusting, relying upon, totally on the God who says he's going to take me through those difficulties. So we can have a peace in that. So in verse 14 it says this, "But as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. I say you are my God." And all I would like to repeat from that is that what other people see, our neighbors and friends, where we are declaring that he is a great God. Because he's not a small God. He is a great God. And in verse 15, David says this, "My times are in your hand." Now that's a fact. You and I are not going to die earlier than God says we're going to die. You and I are not going to suffer tragedies that God is unaware of. You and I are not going to experience great things in our lives and great joys in our lives that God is not aware of, because he has all of that planned out for you. Now, if that is the case, then there should be that peace in our hearts. You've seen our children. When they have been small, they know they can trust their parents to actually prepare the way for them, get things right for them. And isn't that wonderful when you see them going through with some degree of contentment until they get to their teens? Then when they get to their teens, they think they can do it their way. All right? And when they start doing it their way, what happens? Things start to unwind, don't they? And some things can become extremely difficult. But all we want is to actually see that we are constantly in God's presence, recognizing that we are in his times. Now, there's another quote I'd like to give you, right? This is something else. This is from Andrew Murray. And he says this, "In time of trouble, say, first, God brought me here. It is by his will that I am in this time of difficulty. And in that, I will rest. Next, say, he will keep me here in his love and give me grace in this trial to behave as his much loved child. And then say, he will make this trial a blessing, teaching me lessons he intends me to learn, and working in me the grace he means to bestow. And last, say this, in his good time, he can bring me out again. How and when, he knows. Therefore say, I am here by God's appointment, in his keeping, under his training, for his time." If we could live that out, we would have less furrowed brows. We'd have fewer tears. We'd have fewer anxious moments when we're able to come to God and say, "Okay, I trust you completely with my life, every aspect of my life. I look to see you working in your life, in my life, in the small things in your life." You know, God is a great God who loves us dearly. And very often you might think, if he loved me dearly, he could do this magnificent and huge miracle in my life. And we overlook the fact that every day he's doing small miracles in your life. And we really need to look at those and appreciate those and be thankful for the God who blesses us even in the small things. In verse 16, David says this, "Make your face shine upon your servant." That made me think of that priestly blessing that's in Numbers chapter 6. Because that's what what the Lord said to Moses. He said this, "Speak to Aaron and his sons and say this, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel. Aaron and his sons should say this to them, The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. So they shall put my name on the children of Israel, and I will bless them. That's what God wanted to do. He wanted to be able to bless all of those children of Israel. He wanted to bless every individual child of Israel. And he wanted those people to be able to look upon him as a God that was going to meet each and every one of their names, their needs. He was going to place his name on them. Now, Sue and I have now got stepchildren. They're all a bit too old in the tooth for us to consider changing their names. If we were to change their names, they would have a new identity. But as far as God is concerned, he has already placed his name for you on your life. And changing that name should have changed your identity and your character. You are now a child of the living God. It's like being related perhaps to a multi-millionaire that can meet every one of your financial needs. And you see so many spoilt, rich brats, don't you? Because that's precisely what their parents do. They give them too much, the kids don't appreciate it. Our God gives you so much, and so often we don't appreciate it. And we need to. Because he has no need to give us that. We don't deserve it. But he wants to. So he over-provides for us, abundantly provides for us in every way. And his aim is for you to live up to that name of being his child. Verse 19, it says this: Oh, how great is your goodness, which you have laid up for those who fear you, which you have prepared for those who trust in you, in the presence of the sons of men. You know, this is something that the word good there, how great is your goodness, sorry, the word great, how great is your goodness, that has a special meaning in the Hebrew, and it's talking about the very best, the very biggest amount of, the abundance of your greatness. It is imagining the very pinnacle of quality. In fact, it's the background word, it's the root word for the word rabbi. Because a rabbi commonly meant teacher. But from this root word, it really meant the very best one. Which is why Jesus said, let no one call you rabbi. Because you're not going to be called rabbis. He is. He may be the great one. He is the good. When someone came along and said to Jesus, referred to him as the good teacher, why do you call me good? In many ways, he could be no better. But you and I aren't to claim that name as teacher. But this is saying this goodness that God wishes to share with you is of the highest quality. He wants to share it with those people who fear him and respect him. Those people who trust in him entirely. And that goodness is only something that you can see in retrospect. You need to look back every now and then and actually see those things that God has been good to you in your life. And I'm sure each of you is able to see times when he has done great things. In verse 21, for instance, blessed be the Lord, for he has shown me his marvelous kindness in a strong city. So David is saying, yes, he has shown me his kindness. It was the very best of kindness. He has kept me secure in his strong city. And that's something that we need not take for granted, but just appreciate more and more. I want to end in actually making reference to another psalm, because I think this puts a cap on it. Psalm 78. Might not be Psalm 73. This is where God is, the psalmist. This is now Asaph, one of the other guys that wrote the Psalms. He has experienced God's greatness in his life and God's presence and God's peace. And he is saying to God in verse 23, "Yet I am always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel. And afterwards you will take me into glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And being with you, I desire nothing on earth. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." And verse 28, "But as for me, it is good to be near God. I have made the sovereign Lord my refuge. I will tell of all your deeds." There's someone who knows what it's like to be led by the hand. Now, I've got two grandchildren. One is one age and the other one is another. He's 8 and 6, is it? 8 and 6, I think. 8 and 6, it's okay. The 8-year-old no longer needs me to hold his hand when we're crossing the road from school. The 6-year-old, however, he needs his hand held. Because Tom, he would run out. I know he would. And he needs me to hold on to his hand. He doesn't know it. Right? I know it. And I'm the one who's saying, "Tom, you walk here. I'm holding that hand when we're crossing the road." For the rest of the time, when we're just walking down the pavement, he walks without me holding his hand now. Because when he was changed from 5 to being 6, there had to be some change in that security. But I'm there all the time. He's walking at my side. If I see him walking a bit fast, I'll walk a bit fast. If I see that he's getting into any danger at all, I will be grabbing that hand. And he can't get out of that fist. I've got to trust Isaac a little bit more. Because 9 times out of 10, I'm carrying all their school bags and their coats and everything else in this hand. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is, I know better than him. Okay? And I'm making those decisions. I am going to hold your hand now. There will be times when, like Isaac has said, "I don't want you to hold my hand now. I'm a big boy." Right? He'll make those decisions. And that's just like you and I. We say, "There's no need. You don't need to hold my hand now." Okay? I'm bigger. I can look after myself. I don't want to hold your hand. And that's when we get into real trouble. So let's recognize that he knows better than we do. And let's say, "My hand is always there for you to hold me." Right? In an earlier verse that we read this morning, it was he wants to bless those people who will be led and guided by him. Let's be prepared to do that. It forces into us some degree of humility, because we're saying we can't manage on our own. And if we're absolutely frank and honest with ourselves, we'd recognize that that is the truth. That we will not be able to meet the issues of today if we try to stand in our own strength, our own understanding, our own wisdom. We just will not. Things will become too big for us, and we will see things snowballing, and we won't know how to get underneath away from all the pressures that there are upon us. But if we stay close to him, if we always let him hold our hand, then he is going to be the one who will lead us into open spaces where we're not under threat. Areas in our life where we're able to say that we can extend the tent pegs of our tent because we have found a place, a spacious place in which to live because God has provided it. We want him to, I was going to say, to take the pressure off our shoulders. But I would prefer him to actually keep me in a place where that pressure never gets to be so heavy. And that only relies upon me letting him have his way in my life. So Psalm 31, I think, is a great psalm, because there's so much in it that teaches us that peace in our hearts is possible. And the only price that is involved is me letting go and letting God take on board all those issues for me. So that's the end of today. Thank you very much for being patient to actually go through Psalm 31 twice. And I'm so sorry that we've missed the first part of that. I would try and recreate it at some point.